Okay, continue, Mr. Snyder, sorry.
More or less just a comment, I think. Yeah.
Mr. Phillips? Gene, I had one more question, one question. As you were reading everything there, you talked about the classification being arbitrary, not imposed on others similarly situated, and so on, and I started thinking of the 20 mil tax. It sounded to me from the descriptions that you were making that the 20 mil tax would also fall under this equal protection and interstate commerce and so on problems. Why doesn't it, or why haven't you?
Well, this is a long story, and I'm not sure that I know the whole story, but I'll tell you what I do know of it. There was a lawsuit, and when these taxes were passed, there was a lawsuit brought by the oil industry against the state of Alaska. And this was a compromise. This came out of a compromise between the industry and the state of Alaska. We agreed that we would allow the imposition of the 20 mil tax on the pipeline. They made some concessions about dropping some of the others. I'd really like to get you the brief on that, because I was looking for it this evening. I have it up in the office, and the briefs are quite extensive on that. And I think that is absolutely unconstitutional myself. I think it's an absolute violation. But it was agreed that we would not challenge this if certain other concessions were made. And that's the reason that came about. Now I notice that they're introducing, I shouldn't maybe go into this, but they're introducing taxes now to extend that 20 mil tax to the refineries and everything else. And I think this it doesn't go along with the agreement that we had with the state. And it just may be that there will be a litigation with that bill.
What were the concessions that the state made?
I'm not familiar with those. It's maybe someone else here who is more familiar with that. Do you know, Michael?
I don't know specifically, but it had to do with some of the covenants in the right-of-way leasing bill that were objectionable to the industry, and recognizing that the state would reach a point where they had to have the money anyway, just like a reserve tax could be challenged on the same basis. Somebody's got to pay the way, and so to get some of the onerous covenants out of the right-of-way leasing bill that we'd have to live with forever, that this was a trade-off, that we wouldn't challenge the tax. That's the history as I recall it. I haven't reviewed it in 5 years.
Did you want to follow up?
Well, I was only going to say that on that, the situation was such that the state was facing a very, very definite deficit situation with funds, and I think that it wasn't based on anything nebulous, and you could read it right on the books, what the monthly bill was and what the income was, and that the state was going to be a bad financial problem. And that's just part of the background to that situation. And just like when the reserve tax was put on, I think Gene is right. I think a lot of people really question the constitutionality of that. But it was really plain the state had its back up against the wall when things got on stream, and the state taxed normal taxing level, everything would be all right. And I think everybody was just trying to get to the day when that came.
Mr. Brown.
Well, I would just get on this compromise you're talking about. After the oil companies went along, or after the agreement was made with the state, was this a formal agreement?
No, I don't think it was anything in writing.
Was the lawsuit dropped at that time?
The lawsuit was dropped, yes.
Any more questions? If not, thank you very much, Gene. I really appreciate you looking up that material for me. I should have asked you to do it when you mentioned it the other day.
It's kind of nice to get back to the books.
He is parsing plenty of thoughts for me in cases.
Is there anyone else who wants to be heard on this bill?
Well, I just said, they're going to say, I'll wait for the information that's coming to us on the formula and so on. But we might look into that, the percentage of the amount on the actual lease.
Oh, but they paid the feds for the lease.
Basing the fee on the amount of the lease sale, the amount.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'd like to comment, that'd just make it more unconstitutional because you're taxing a federal lease. That's what I'm asking.
I think they deserve it, though.
Well, I think the federal government should pay it, yes. Actually, I'd be wholeheartedly there.
I was thinking on top of it, they would pay to the federal government, so we wouldn't get into that.
Really lay it on.
Madam Chairman, we would appreciate the feds taking it out of their pocket and giving it back instead of us paying 5% of whatever we pay them, too.
I think we all like that.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming tonight. We'll take the bill up again Monday morning when the meeting's adjourned. We've got a lot of reorder. I'll call the meeting to order. Let the record reflect that Representatives Phillips, Snyder, Kelly, and Rudd are present. This morning, we'll continue to hear testimony on House Bill 202, the property tax in the unorganized borough. Mr. Murnaby and Mr. Brigner, did you want to continue testifying on the bill?
Yes.
Why don't you step right up here and bring another chair if you can find one. I'd be very happy to hear from you again. Could you again tell our reporter who you are and who you represent?
Okay. I'm Glenn Murnaby. I live in Tok, Alaska. My occupation is electrician and plumber. I represent the Voice of the Bush Tax Committee. We had a public meeting in the Tok area, 150 people responded. We formed our committee to look into House Bill 202, Senate Bill 35, and find out a lot of facts on it and take them back to the community and see if we can apply the results of this legislation, if it were passed, to our committee and then determine if it would benefit or not benefit our area of Alaska.
I'm Terry Brigner, also from Tok and a contractor in the Tok area, member of this Voice of the Bush Tax Committee.
Okay. Did you want to continue with your testimony?
All right.
Fine, just proceed.
I believe at the close of yesterday's session, we were just discussing the $10,000 basic exemption on real property. And we read a copy of Mr. Parr's weekly article in the All Alaska Weekly, in which he stated that he proposed that the unorganized areas be given the right of a $10,000 exemption that's now set for municipalities such as a second class city, but we don't see the wording of that intent in the bill. We also talked to Chairperson Rudd about a letter expressing intent where he suggested or proposed a $10,000 to $15,000 exemption. And we were discussing the fact that we read the bill and we don't see where that specifically is pointed out. One thing from yesterday's testimony that we wanted to make very clear was that the tax assessor's office did not put a recommendation on the bill. What he did say was he supports the bill because of the spinoff benefit of having the property in it in the unorganized borough categorized and to provide data for future legislative purposes, but he did not come out and say he supported the bill for the intended purpose of the bill, and we want to make that very clear. Continuing our analysis of the bill, we're bothered by the lack of interpretation of improved or unimproved property. We received a memorandum from Mr. Bradley, a legislative lawyer, attorney, which contains what we see as the only interpretation of unimproved or improved property. It's on page 2 of that March 7th memorandum. And here's what it says. Note that section 21D would allow taxation when property, excuse me, I'm in the wrong place. Oh. Note also that unimproved land is defined in the bill at 232, and then it says real property exempt from taxation under AS 295320. This provision of the municipal code establishes required exemptions, but it seems like we have the cat chasing its tail. We're saying that property that's exempt is unimproved, and property that's unimproved is tax exempt. We haven't been able to go into that. We're guilty of not having access to that statute referred to. But We would like to see the actual definition of improved or unimproved property in the wording of the bill. I'd like to say right now, we don't have a lawyer living within 200 miles of where we live, and when we may be in error at times. The best we can do is read the federal constitution, the state constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and then get together in a small group and try and say what that means to us. So we may be out of place at times here. That about concluded our analysis of the tax assessor's critique on the bill. Now we'd like to move into the Bradley memo, which we saw for the first time yesterday. Under 1D, they mention certain kinds of native property, which is or is not taxable. I believe they give four examples. We have come across a fifth example that we think would be very significant. Apparently, on personal allotments, there's what they call an Indian restricted deed. And it gives tax exemption forever. Again, we're not lawyers, but we did get this from the Office of the Tax Assessor. And we believe that this could amount to a lot of the free enterprise housing or private development of homes that natives might do on native allotment land. And we're kind of asking a question here. We've uncovered it. We think it's significant, and we hope that you check that out for us. Moving to the second page, we largely concur with the paragraph which Mr. Bradley supports the exemption of unimproved property. We have no real issue with that. Oh, yes. On first page, near the bottom, in lieu of taxes, apparently there's some way that possibly the federal government can make up revenue, or in this case, third-party leases are taxable in the form of rents, royalties, profits, and other revenues or proceeds.
Excuse me now, where are you in this memo?
All rents.
All rents, beginning right here.
It would be the last sentence, I believe, in its entirety.
The last sentence under 1D.
It seems to indicate that, in spite of the fact that these properties aren't taxable directly, that when they do become productive and are subject to rent, that is taxable. But it doesn't say that tax would go to an organized government in the bush that would form in response to this tax bill. It looks like it would be general fund monies that wouldn't go directly to the community involved, because the bill itself establishes only a property tax. And those look to be some form of income or revenue tax. Again, we're making a statement at the same time asking a question. On page 2, sorry to keep you shifting back and forth here, but near the bottom we have A1 and then A2. We see household furniture of individual householders not exceeding $500. We've been of the opinion that is personal property, and we want to caution that the bill is aimed at real property only and does not have a personal property connotation to it. And we hope this statement wouldn't bring in the aspect of personal property taxes.
No, let me try to explain that. I asked Mr. Bradley to itemize the exemptions under this section of the bill. Mm-hmm. And this one is real property exempt under AS 2953-020. That would be this exemption on line 19. So I just simply asked him to list what the law said was exempt under that law.
We noticed that in the Alaska statute, yeah. In the law itself.
Right. So I simply asked him to give us a list of the properties that are exempt under that law. So these.
So in other words, it has no application to this bill and as such.
Well, yeah. These things would also be exempt from taxation right. Under this bill, but yes. If it were personal property, of course, it wouldn't apply anyway.
I see.
Now, item 6 can. We did look up that bill, and we saw the exemptions went far beyond number 6. There was quite, or 6 had a lot of sub headings to it, and they're not here. But it was just merely to create an example to help explain the bill, rather than it won't be transferred into the language of the bill.
No.
It's an explanatory.
Yeah, this is an explanatory.
Aid. I see. Okay, on page 3, parentheses 3, we're talking about the $10,000 or $15,000 exemption. And that, I just say that. That's what we're talking about. Should be applied to the unorganized borough in general. Now, one of the things we wonder about, it's been suggested to us in the bush that a service district would be a form of government. If you have a service district, it seems like you're in a no man's land. You're organized for a special purpose, but you're organized. How would that be handled in the bill? We feel there should be something. Yes?
I'm not. Do you have service districts?
We haven't yet, but as we understand it, it's something that's it's law, and if we had, say, a problem with community water, we could form a service district to deal with that specific issue.
I don't believe that's the case. I believe that first you have to have a municipality, and then within the municipality you can form service areas for certain specific services.
The people that have been through representing state government in the past have suggested that it would stand as a sole form of government for a specific purpose. One of our problems, one of the inequities in the tax situation that works against us is we don't have organized government, so there's no way you can hand us revenue funds from our federal taxes. That's a big chunk of money. Percentage-wise, federal taxes are overwhelming. And we can't even apply for that money, and not too many people are really concerned about that. Let that go to Anchorage or some other districts. But it came up in relation to that, I remember specifically, that if we had a service district, then we could accept revenue sharing that filters back from the federal government through the service district. Again, we're kind of asking the question, something we feel this committee should check into.
Perhaps after the committee meeting is over, you might find it useful to talk to Mr. Palmer McCarter, who's back there. He's the director of the Local Government Assistance Division in the Community and Regional Affairs Department, and he could probably answer some of these questions for you.
Okay, real fine.
He also has a booklet on taxes around the state.
Yes, what is
they may have already picked one up.
Okay, paragraph 4, no real contention there. We don't thoroughly understand the oil taxation, but it seems to be handled properly. Down to who does? down to 18, where they explain 18.55.250. Apparently, all ASHA and all HUD property, and now we add all property built on Indian restricted deed is exempt. And we don't know how long. We don't know if that's related to the Claims Act some way, or if it's as long as the people are making a income-related payment on their property. But we understand that according to the tax assessor's conversations we've had, he told us first that Alaska State Housing Authority homes would be taxable
under
certain conditions, and that HUD could never be. And now we see in Mr. Bradley's determination that Alaska State Housing Authority housing as well is not taxable. So there's a problem area that we think the committee should look at. Also, in here it says, I'm reading the first paragraph under where it explains 18.55.20, last sentence again. However, instead of taxes, the authority may make payments to the municipality or political subdivision for improvements, services, I think there should be a comma there, and facilities furnished. That's reimbursement for services provided. It's not tax revenue that would sustain the local government that might form as a result of such a bill. And it's not really a tax source. It looks to be just reimbursement for something provided. Again, it would go to the general fund, as we understand it, and not necessarily get back to us.
Well, that money, but that law only provides that they can pay to the municipality or other political subdivision. It wouldn't go to the state at all.
Yes, but I see, right. But still, it wouldn't be money to carry the cost of local government. It would be a reimbursement. But it would be direct to the local municipality then, okay?
No, you might touch on that when you make the comment here, just a little bit about the creation of, actually, of a political subdivision by a tax on the unorganized borough.
Yes, we don't, time is limited, and we have to go back today, and we've got a lot of questions that we want to raise. Some are kind of philosophical, but we want to run through them quick.
Sure.
Because if anyone else has to testify, we really want to hear what they say. So I'm going to kind of run down things, and then if you have a question, please stop me. I'm going to move along kind of fast. One of the flaws in the bill is a second-class city can be a cop-out. If Tanta Cross is a village 12 miles out of Toke, and if they were somehow had a taxable property, by forming a second-class city and then putting on a 3% sales tax, they are not liable. They do not have to pay. They're exempt from the property tax. Now, this is mainly in Orsini's version of the bill, House Senate Bill 35. But the sales tax wouldn't hurt them because they have no retail operation. It would, in fact, be maybe when the oil man delivered oil, they would pay tax, but they have no retail businesses. All that's in Toke. So we believe a lot of areas, small groups could organize, pass a sales tax, which would be meaningless to them, and come out from under the bill. We believe there's questions of constitutionality. It seems like that there's a discriminatory effect when the House is divided 13-27, Bush versus organized legislators, that you're imposing a bill on an area that we cannot defend ourselves from. It's aimed at a specific segment of Alaskans, and the people who carry the voting weight themselves are exempt from the bill. We believe the bill should be redesigned to be a statewide bill. What we really believe is that sometime in the near future, 10 years, the resistance to property taxes as a means of revenue is fading out, and that there'll be a thing of the past. We believe the bill, we shouldn't move into it right now. I believe yesterday we talked about how the bill could possibly disassemble the new REA school districts, and ours is very successful. We think that's a real concern, and we would like to see this bill referred to health, education, and social HESS services in both the Senate and the House. We don't know how to do that, but we want it read into the testimony that we'd like to see it routed there. We believe it's a real potential impact.
Now, what was the reason again for it? For
by encouraging local government in our area. Let's look at just our area. We have Toke in the center and five satellite schools. The property in the satellite schools is relatively without tax base. Toke has it. We can see where Toke, if there were a significant amount of revenue from the tax base, which I think we agreed there wasn't yesterday, we would possibly pull out of that school district and become responsible for our own school. The satellite schools would be in a helpless position. I think this is typical of school districts, that there's a larger community and a satellite system in most of the REAA areas. And we can see the fact that the bill tends to force local government would tend to disassemble the school districts. I know our school superintendent for our area has a real fear of it, and he's probably talking to other school superintendents to see how they feel about it. And in our case, a school district is wonderful. We're doing real well. I believe we testified to that yesterday.
I just wanted to bring out a point that what he's talking about there, because what happened when the boroughs came into existence, normally what happens is probably what would happen in that instance, the boundary commission would see that, you know, the district was included in the boundaries of the incorporated city. Because when the cities are incorporated, the boundary commission makes that decision as to what the boundaries will be.
I see. We have communities that have no school in them. Tanta Cross lies 12 miles from Toke, yet all the schools are within Toke. The furthest town is Eagle, and it's 160 miles away, and it would be an awful big second-class city if the Boundary Commission drew them with us. And you would get into uncommonality, where the socioeconomic conditions are different between Toke and even Eagle. And Article 10 of the Constitution wants commonality in local government.
Mr. Dobbs.
Yes.
Have you guys considered organizing this borough?
Well, what we want to do is get information and take it back and find out what revenue we would raise and could we support a local government from it. So I can't answer your question until we make that determination.
So, but the point hasn't been brought up.
The point has been brought up by our committee and in TOC, yes. But it's a tough thing to analyze because we have to look at all loopholes where the income might drain away from us.
Quite new there.
I was talking about discriminatory aspects of the greater of by far the majority of the votes not being exempt from it themselves, and talking about making it a statewide bill and then exempting organized areas, something like that. If it's not on its face unconstitutional, it seems like a bad practice. It seems like legislation directed at a particular group. If we look at Mr. Bradley's memorandum on the second page, he says, there is general consensus, however, that states do not have similar authority and must deal with all their residents equally. He's talking about native versus white, but I think the statement still applies in other cases. On constitutionality, we raise another point. It says, either in a state constitution or in a mandatory borough act, maybe I can get some help there, that the unorganized borough now is a borough in name only, and therefore not a form of government. The minute we subject it to a special piece of legislation and a tax collecting and a revenue procedure, we say it is no longer a borough in name only. It becomes a local government. In fact, it is local government. Again, Article 10 says political subunits will be designed with commonality of geographic features, economic features, sociological features. Yet we think there's little we have in common with the Aleutian chain and part of the North Slope and Southeast. We think it would become unconstitutional because it becomes local government that violates commonality as called for in the Constitution.
Yeah, Mr. Murnley,
yes.
Maybe I could try to make a point here. I think you're on the wrong track when you think of it as establishing local government, as of this bill as establishing local government. It doesn't at all, of course. It simply extends a state tax into areas that have not been taxed yet. It doesn't establish local government at all. Local government would be where you keep your taxes at home to provide your own services.
Yes, under the current of the classes of government that are spelled out, it does not meet those. But we kind of think that in fact, in reality, it's more than a borough in name only now. It's a point of contention. Some of the things we mentioned yesterday, that it doesn't solve an inequity. People, we don't see many people who support this bill for the amount of revenue that's generated, even at your figures, which are much higher than ours. We see some legislators supporting it to encourage local government. We see some supporting it to classify property. These are valid reasons, but we say if you're going to pass a tax bill, it should be supported as a tax issue and not the side benefits from it. We said yesterday that we set up a whole new layer of inequities. That's another reason some people tend to support the bill. They think it's inequitable, and this will remove the inequities. We say it establishes a new tier of inequities within the bush. Again, I go back to our school district with 90% of the taxable property being in TOC, virtually none in the outlying areas. If we had a borough the size of our school district, the inequity would then be relocated rather than eliminated.
Yes. Could you expand on that? How would it be inequitable if you established a borough the size of your school district?
Because all the taxable property is within TOC. We have native exclusions. I think there's only 13 pieces of privately held property now between TOC and the border on the highway. And we think the people of TOC, if we were to go to a local government as a result of this bill, get into it, and then have to raise revenue, the only choice we would have would be to go to about an 87 mil tax on the property in TOC. So we believe there's a new tier of inequity in the bush level, and it's not really taken away the existing inequity that some people think exists between the organized and unorganized area. And I want to get the revenue sharing on that. We can't even accept our revenue sharing funds. That essentially you people, the at least the Anchorage people, do gain on that.
Now wait a minute. First
yes.
of all,
I may be in error. Yes.
Well, just simply on a philosophical level, mm-hmm. you know, we pay taxes in Anchorage. We pay property taxes.
Right.
Our mill rate in Anchorage is a little over 19 mills. We pay for our own schools. We have for a year. We build our own school.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people in the bush come in and say, well, gee, Anchorage gets everything, you know, my immediate response is we pay for an awful lot
yeah.
there that other people don't pay
yeah.
for. But that's all.
We haven't testified that Anchorage gets everything, but they do get quite a bit. They get everything I buy. Every bit of food I buy is brokered through Anchorage. All the materials I use in my construction business. I think we can help them a lot. Now, Anchorage.
Wait a minute, I
yes.
To ask one
excuse
thing.
Me.
How did you arrive at the figure of 87 mills?
No, that was. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used it. I use it to emphasize a point. I don't know what it would be, but it could be. It could be very high.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
that should be.
Depends on what services you want to deliver. You know.
Yeah, even for one basic service. With say 14 houses taxable, the millage rate, it's obviously we couldn't do it by millage. We'd have to find some other source of revenue. Of course, then we would be have a way to accept revenue sharing too. We know people in Anchorage who are hard pressed to pay their tax. We know that they've been reassessed recently, and they're going to reassess the remaining 2/3 of the city, and they're getting high property taxes. We also see that they have no sales tax in Anchorage. We also see that they have nearly all of the valuable corporate owned and privately owned big structures. We know that they have to tax themselves to get at this source of revenue. We don't shed too many tears for a high millage rate because we believe they do that to gain the revenue from the city. I guess what we'd like to see, not sit here and say you pay tax and we don't, you want your services, we want ours, but a way to get away with property taxing completely. We believe Chancey Croft is working on something like this out of oil revenues. One thing that hasn't been considered is, I've had 5 kids go through the Tolk school system. One graduated from the university at Christmas. They've never had the opportunity for a language. They never had trigonometry. There's never been a music program except when the ladies organization raised money and bought some instruments. Our schools don't have the frills. I think that were this tax imposed on us, you would see a great demand for services, right or wrong. They would really put in some expensive demands. Again, right or wrong, I don't know, but I think it would be a very real factor. If most of you are probably familiar with Maine Junior High School in Fairbanks, it sits on a pretty valuable piece of property near Penny's. If that property were sold for several million dollars, I wonder where the money would go. It wouldn't go into the general fund. It would stay with the local government who built the school. It's not really a valid point, but you do own the schools you build. You also, for better or for worse, own the ones in the bush, which you probably wish you didn't own. But I think we have to look at other legislation legislation that's aimed at providing relief to the construction of schools in the organized boroughs. I know there's things in the hopper right now. Okay, the tax assessor recommends a study for implementation of the bill if passed. We say the cart's before the horse. You should have the study before you consider the legislation. I'll try and be brief. We believe there's a false impression of how much goodies we get and don't pay for. We can give several examples of that both ways. When you people who drive back to Anchorage after this session, if you drive,
yeah.
and when you pass through our area, when you pass through a drive on the highway system in the interior of Alaska, you physically see 90% of the tax base. In spite of the fact that the area's relatively large. You don't multiply what you see by the acres, by no means. You've seen it all, the good and the bad. So I sometimes wonder, they think the area is big, therefore the tax, though it's scattered, it's still sizable. But take a trip on the highway system, you'll almost see it all. Yes.
Okay, if that's true, then who owns all that land? If we just go, you know, if I go through back and forth,
mm-hmm.
and I drive through there, and I recognize what you're saying.
Yes.
But what about the land that's off the road? I mean, you know, that's something I don't know.
It's unowned. The state owns a tremendous amount right downtown in the middle of the district. They're the biggest land speculators we have in our area. The privately held land, it just doesn't exist, other than almost all of it has some kind of driveway or improvement on it. The land that is held for speculation is owned by Anchorage and Fairbanks residents who hope someday to be able to retire to that area, or else have always recognized it as a natural corridor for mineral or oil wealth.
Just taking for an example there, Glenn, when you cross the border into, out of Canada into Alaska, when you get just a few miles below Northway from there to Dot Lake, everything back on both sides of the highway is either in native selection or D2 land or reservation. It's all, other than just a few allotments that are along the highway that are that I think I could count for you, and with the exception of some that the title might not be.
Cathedral Bluffs is the only one in that direction.
On Dot, in Dot Lake, I think Cathedral Bluffs is, beyond Tanner Cross, is the only one that is privately owned. And that was, I think, purchased from the United States government.
Yeah, there's just a handful of parcels between the border.
It's an enormous area, but D2 land and native settlement and so on. As far as private ownership, I'm talking about people who...
Well, I recognize that.
You see people squatting too, with no right to the land that you do see. There's our old buildings. People have found they couldn't get title and wandered off and left half a gas station or something like that.
Like the one towards the border.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All in kind of summation here, the bill seems to have a lot of support, not on its merits as a tax bill, but for spin-off benefits of a hope of curing inequities or classifying property for other government studies and uses, or
organizing our,
or as a means of encouraging organized government. Again, we kind of think the cart is before the horse. We think maybe we need to take a good look at what's available to our areas and see why they don't really apply. I think if government would apply to our community, we have had it a long time ago. But when we look through the classes of boroughs and the two classes of cities, we just can't really make it work without more headaches than we have now being unorganized. We kind of think that government should grow from a community, not be imposed on it, and the taxes should grow from the government. We mentioned the fact that there's potential for disassembling some of the school districts in the area. It'll create new inequities, and there's no secret, we're against it right now, because as what we understand, we can't make it work in our area if we apply it to our community.
I'd like to ask a question. Are you saying then that really you would obviously not want to have any tax whatsoever in that area of any kind?
I think the members of our committee would like to see a statewide sales tax, and we're major buyers right now. I buy a lot from Mr. Parr's district, but I can get a little card and get away scot-free.
So you'd be more inclined towards a sales tax in the unorganized rural rather than a property tax in the unorganized.
No, we don't want any tax aimed at a specific area passed by people who are exempt from it. But a statewide sales tax,
The legislature obviously sits as the assembly for the unorganized borough, which is considered in the Constitution as a government entity.
Yes, we're aware of that.
You have to observe it in that manner, and expectation that area is going to pay something someday rather than everybody having to carry the burden of it.
Right now, we're losing a large percentage of our revenue sharing funds. Going to local government probably would cure that. We don't see all the inequities that we're not carrying our fair share.
We can argue that all day, because you receive your schools at no cost to you, other than what you pay in income tax. You get all those services,
We believe you're headed in that direction too, though, if some of this legislation passes to review of the, then you have the 95% operating cost. Yeah.
We have bill that would allow Charlie's bill too, the wage tax.
Pardon?
Wage tax, where, I'm trying to say, would this be an alternative acceptable to you, taxes on wages?
Yeah, we have that now, don't we?
Well, that bill applies only in municipalities, but.
The economy in the bush exists by a thread. We pointed out that Mr. Parr has, and everything we've read, talked about the $250,000 lodge as, and it's an example of people. It's a very populist type thing. But in fact, I think we pointed out that only 4 out of 25 lodges on the Alaska Highway and 4 out of 15 or something between Tope and Glen Ellen are still in business. And as far as evaluation of them, we're going to have a good opportunity because of the 3 lodges in Tope that weren't quoted in these figures I just gave. One's in bankruptcy and will be sold May 19th in an SBA sale. That's the Parker House in Tope. Things are not good. And it's questionable whether the tax can even be collected.
Something you said I was kind of interested in. You said that you buy a lot of stuff in Representative Parr's district and you pay taxes there, but a little card gets you out of that. What was that about?
It's a tax exemption card.
For outlying areas.
I think I pay $4 or $5 for it. And what it does, it encourages me to buy my things in Fairbanks, which is 200 miles away, rather than coming to the Moore selection, 325 miles away. So it's a strong inducement for me to buy my contractor and food supplies, even though they're a little higher up there, because it's a one-day trip. If they were to take that away, then I would probably be coming to Anchorage almost exclusively. But that's because of our geographic location. Maybe Mr. Park could explain the tax exemption a little more. It removes all sales tax, both city and borough.
It's based on the fact that you're not a resident.
That's right.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that you're taking the goods outside of the borough for use.
And there's a $50 maximum tax on any deal. So an oil company walks in one day and buys $1 million worth of stuff, he's taxed $50. And while I appreciate that tax, and I've carried the card in the past, I haven't renewed it, I'd hate to see it go. It seems to me that there's some relief for real property owners in his area if they would eliminate that. My personal greed tells me leave it there, but looking at the tax situation all over the state, it's...
Actually, one thing that Glenn mentioned here that I think is quite significant, the people who live in the bush, not just in our given area, but the people who live in the bush generally are high per capita consumers if they're involved in any kind of employment. Because it costs more to live, it takes more to live in the bush, in a sense. And this is what we were getting at here, that the concept, and we're not recommending one kind of tax or another, but the concept of, I think it bothers all of us, the concept of paying a rental, so to speak, on a piece of property I've already paid for, or I lose it, just as surely as I would if I hadn't made the payments for it, you follow my thinking, I think is gaining a great deal of opposition, not just in Alaska, but all over the country. And I'm talking about areas with tax rates of, say, 36 and 38 and 40 mils. And I know personally of that kind of tax rate. Now, we're not recommending one kind of tax or another, but we are saying that the property tax is not the only alternative open to us.
We were analyzing the belief that we get a free ride in the bush, and we tried to take somebody, well, like Terry lives halfway between Tope and Northway. The only two services we see that he has provided from the state are after-the-fact police protection. They will come and investigate and list your property and try and find the culprit. He doesn't have it while he's on his own out there. And correspondence study, which is $165 per course, grades 1 through 12. That's what the cost of the correspondence study is. And then they have an administrator that calls you up and says, how's your kid doing? We really don't see what other services he has.
You have highways, you have aviation.
The highways in the Tok area are shared by all of us, and it's paid a lot through a gasoline tax. Now, we don't go with the concept that the Tok money spent on the highways in Tok are for Tok people. We kind of reverse that. We build a community from which the state can operate at reduced cost compared to an isolated bus station, and they're there as part of a mutual practical agreement. Probably you've heard where Tok has got $10,000 for an ambulance. Okay, we're unincorporated. We have private citizens exposing themselves to a lot of liability, overtaking a function that the state police used to do. They used to run them into town. Now, we're providing a statewide service. Most of our calls are truck drivers, Anchorage, Fairbanks people, but a high percentage nationally are our own. We benefit from it, but we're saving the state a lot of money. I remember I lost a race with a stork to Glen Ellen one time, so I'm glad the service is there. But I remember when the police had to make a special trip to run these bodies in, who are strangers to us. Again, we've gotten money for a fire department. Until that date, the state assumed responsibility for fire protection, maintained the taxes, pulled their men off the job to answer a call. Now we protect a lot of state and federal property with a volunteer organization. A lot of times we run into people and they say, look, you've got a clinic, you got an ambulance, and you got a fire station. They're the three big things we've gotten. They also say we have a tourism center. Again, I don't care if it's there. That's all citizens, and it benefits us all, and not us in particular. Going beyond that, outside of a lot of federal programs, yeah, I can't fathom. The state-generated funds that go to us, I don't think are so much. I think there's a lot of federal money, and we are subject to federal and state income tax. I think the inequity there is, to a large degree, imagined, and I think it's kind of curing itself, especially in the area of legislation, if you people support these bills that takes the construction burden off schools in your areas.
Are there any questions, more questions from Mr. Randy?
This car you talked about, is that issued by the North Star Borough, or issued by?
I believe I go to the borough office for my car, don't I? It saves me an awful lot of money, but it does encourage me to go there. I mean, somebody that wasn't in a geographical position would probably go there anyway, or we go to Anchorage anyway. But it's very meaningful in our area to be exempt from it. It's a lot of money I'm exempt from. And the oil companies get away scot-free because they have the $50 maximum tax on any one transaction. I think that's the way it is.
One of the lobbyists here asking about that. I'll mention it to
them. Now, we don't suppose to understand what other benefits the community, say for example of Fairbanks or the North Star Borough, might realize from the money that we spend there, other than the tax money, if you follow what I mean. There's no question there's at least a little boost to the economy, and what other tax benefits that are built into the system, we don't know, but at least that part of it we're relieved from.
You're stating that there's maybe at the most 13 or 14 lots or whatever pieces of property that can be taxed.
13 or 14 houses that would compare with a typical housing unit that has to meet codes on cement foundations and everything. No, there's many more homes.
Yeah.
But you get to the one that I would say would correspond to this basic valuation per parcel of 32,000. I don't think there's 13. And none of them are really finished on the inside. The people pay as they go.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Representative Carr, have there been any studies done by the state as to the feasibility of the assessing property taxes in the unincorporated borough?
My understanding, Mr. Kelly, is that the tax assessor, as the Community Regional Affairs, has been wanting to have this for several years and never gotten an appropriation to do it. That's my understanding.
Are there any more questions for Mr. Murundi or Mr. Brigner? We certainly appreciate your coming down to talk to us. I'm very, very glad you came. We'll try to keep in touch with you as we work on the bill.
Thank you very much. We'll be in town till 2 o'clock, and if anybody wants to call us.
You might want to spend some time with Mr. McCarter. I think he could answer all the questions about local government.
We certainly will.
And so on. Yeah.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You guys be free to write all of us.
Right. We've got your names and addresses and your seating arrangement.
We also, I would like to personally express my appreciation for the courtesy we received.
Excuse me just a bit. Can we come to order again, please? Mr. Carr wanted to.
I want to make a very brief statement, Chairman Wallace.
Yes, please do. Why don't you just pull up another chair?
I'm sorry I wasn't able to be here yesterday and listen to the testimony yesterday, but unfortunately Congress meets at the same time. I'd like to go back and straight to the basic intent of the bill. It's not, as was implied, to force these people into a municipality. The intent is to remedy what I see to be an inequity in our taxation. It's that simple. If they ever organize into a borough or city, that's their privilege. Second thing, the gentleman referred to a cop-out using a second-class city. Now, I don't think that's true of my bill. I think he's talking about Senate Bill 35, which, if I'm correct on that, I certainly did not intend as a cop-out. On the exemptions, and I believe Mr. Bradley will confirm this, my intent was to grant all the exemptions which is presently authorized in the municipal people. Now, there's a senior citizens exemption. And under the Pipeline Leasing Act, I think it's the right name, our 20 mil tax on the pipeline property, municipalities are authorized to exempt up to $10,000 of the first $10,000 of property. It was my intent that be applied throughout the organized borough. Now the reason for the variation from 10 to 15 was we had a bill last year to raise that 10 to 15. If the law still says 10, it must not have gotten through. But I know we had it in the House last year. I remember a discussion in the caucus about it. To go from 10 to 15. And I would not care. I think my memo of the committee, which I left for you last Friday, said if a committee decided to raise this is fine. I would have no problem with that whatsoever. My intent was, and if we've missed any of these, I'd be perfectly happy to have them included, that any exemptions which are presently authorized in the organized boroughs and cities would be applied in the unorganized borough. One thing more I'd like to point out is that the millage rate specified in my bill is the millage rate for educational purposes only. It's not the millage rate which is assessed for any other services, only for education. But the intent was, again, that these people out in the small inland bush areas do not get many other services, but they do get education, and that's all I'm concerned with. I'm not concerned with any other services at all, only, and therefore they should not be taxed any other. The last point I might make is that I noticed that there's a great deal of discussion about how many lodges have been in business and gone out and so forth, rather than based on the fact that I use as an example in one of my columns a $250,000 lodge. That was simply an illustrative example. Now, presumably all the places that are in business out in the bush do have business licenses. I don't know any exemption from that. And I have asked, and am getting from the Department of Revenue, a complete list of all the businesses in these areas. And that will not give us any information about residences. It'll give us a bit of information on businesses, though, and I'll make that available to the committee as soon as I get it. So you will be able to see how many lodges, how many service stations, how many restaurants, etc. they are.
Are you going to ask also in that to get some handle on the gross business receipts of those businesses so that it might give a little idea what's going on?
If we can do this without violating the right of privacy.
No, I didn't
obviously
mean by
amount of
by
one business.
I didn't mean not, by yeah. business. You know, I meant, you know, if you're getting a listing
of
all the businesses, what's the total of all those businesses?
I'd be delighted if revenue will give it. I don't know if they can. I know that they do have the list of their businesses, but whether they have it so that they can simply punch their computer and come out with the amount of business done, I don't know. And the only last point I'd make, which ties in with this, is we don't have any information on residences. I personally know if you drive from Fairbanks down to Delta, 2-3 miles from you get into Delta, for example, off on the right-hand side, there's several homes there that you can see from the highway that I would, based on what I know of Fairbanks prices, I would say are somewhere in the, at least the $65,000 to $90,000 range, somewhere in that bracket. Now, I don't remember exactly what's in total, but there are and there are some places like that, certainly around Delta, and they're beautiful homes. And I would really be surprised to see very many places with a $16,000 assessment. I don't know what it costs to build now, but it must cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $40, $50 a square foot. It's a big house to get up to that.
I would also note that I have asked the Department of Revenue to give us the total amount collected by the state in income taxes from the unorganized borough in the last couple of years, so that we can begin to get a handle on that. So, oh, Mr. Murray, did you
want to? Yes, in regard to Mr. Farr's statement, I was confused. On the $10,000, is that an income deal for senior citizens, or is it the second class real property exemption?
The senior citizen property has a tax exemption on all their property. So if you have a senior citizen living in a hotel, then you would pay no property tax.
If they have a gross annual income of less than $10,000?
Doesn't matter. No, less than that at all.
Okay, that's not
now, period. The other thing that was proposed, which is now, which a municipality can now do, the Fairbanks North Star Borough could do it if they wish, is to say the first $10,000 of your property, you don't pay any tax on. Any borough can do that right now on state law. They can't give you more than $10,000 on state law. Mr. Bradley, am I still right? Okay. That was the intent, that basic $10,000 exemption would be made available here.
I see. Right. That's what we hope to hear.
Now, the senior citizen tax exemption, I'm not sure whether that's passed the Senate yet.
It will.
Two more points I'd like to make. I want to caution about the sheer number of business licenses. Because we have a fragile economy, the average family probably has or should have, and probably has about six licenses. They have every woman sells Avon, all those things that New York has. There's an awful lot of meaningless business licenses for selling trapping supplies, things like that. They try and buy wholesale. They have to show a business license to do it. They may or may not actually use it. So the gross revenue would be the meaningful thing rather than the sheer number of licenses. In regard to homes in the Delta area, the North Star Borough comes down pretty close to them as far as the Old Richardson Roadhouse, and they are a second class city, so they would be exempt from this bill. So the houses you see that have appear to be contractor built and are in fact worth a lot of money, if they're within the city limits, are already exempt. And
you must be mistaken, Mr. Lundy. This is my bill, maybe looking at 35, I don't know. My bill does not exempt the second class cities unless they're already charging a property tax or something, which I don't believe they are. So it does not exempt them.
If they have a sales tax.
Just exempt. Okay. You're talking about Senate Bill 35, not this bill.
Okay, I'd like to say something that comes out of our ignorance, is that we can only come down once right now to testify. We hope the testimony we have given will apply to Mr. Orsini's committee, and I hope he has access to it. And we hope he will use it.
We'll tell him that it's available, and if he wants to, he can make a transcript of it.
Okay, and one more thing, the square footage cost on a home, the great majority of the homes are homeowner built, and they're scrounged and financed as they go. And the square footage is amazing that they achieve with. If they could do it as contractors, we would have a good taxable base.
But you're only speaking for your own area, right?
Yes, I don't want to speak for Delta, make that clear.
Okay. I hired
Thank you all. The meeting is adjourned.